and welcome to The Shift, the official podcast of Beyond the Box Score. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and by popular demand, joining me today, Jeff Sullivan from Fangraphs. Jeff, how are you doing?
Popular demand. How many people demanded? Demanded? That's a strong word. I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing good. Is it one person? One person on The Shift's Twitter podcast. I put out a call to see who they were interested in having on the show, and one person did drop your name, and this was like after we had already agreed to do this. So I made it sound like I was this genie, like, okay, your wish is my command. And here's Jeff on the show. And when secretly we'd been talking about this for like 2 weeks.
So if one vote is popular demand, that implies that there were no more than two votes and that we split and somebody else is unavailable.
That implies okay. That, but that's not actually what happened. I think there was the most votes anybody got was one. So you are the leader in the clubhouse in terms of the most requested guest.
Yeah.
Along with like six or seven other people, most of whom are actual people who write for Beyond the Box Score and are just nominating themselves. So
take that, girls in high school. I'm popular now.
So, again, thanks for joining me on the show. Unfortunately, given that you're a writer for Fangraphs and you're a writer for USS Mariner, and according to your background, you made Lookout Landing a thing, I'm going to have to ask you about the Mariners, because the Mariners are fun. They're interesting. I used to go to a lot of Mariners games, so I have a special place in my heart for them. But this year, it seems like the consensus is starting to build that they're the best team in the AL West, with the Athletics kind of doing crazy Athletics things and the Angels now being a disappointment for a couple of years. Maybe the Mariners are the team to beat in the AL West. Do you think that's the case, first of all? And secondly, how weird does that feel if that's actually the case?
I think it's only natural to see more of, I guess, the flaws in that which you know the best. So I know the Mariners best, and I can look around, and you look at the position players, for example, and you don't see a hole necessarily anywhere. But on the other hand, you think, well, Cano, he'll be good. Seager, he'll be good. And then who else is really, like, known to be good among them? Even Nelson Cruz, who they paid a lot for, like, before last year, he was only kind of a decent hitter, and then he had a big season. So I see a lot of ways where this could go tits up, like, real quick. You know, or like Felix gets hurt or just anything. But they do seem like they are a good team. They're positioned to be a good team. The Angels, I think, are still positioned to be a similarly good team. And I've been okay with much of the A's offseason. So I think they're still around. And even the Astros, like, aren't a rollover anymore. Pushover, rollover, whatever. You know what I mean? They don't suck as much as they used to.
Yeah, Texas is still kind of a big black hole. They're not great, and the Rangers all of a sudden, you know, after I think it was like 2 years ago, everyone's like, the Rangers can't fail. They're set up for so far in the future, and now all of a sudden they're kind of a mess again thanks to injury and the fact that there are no pitchers in Texas anymore.
Yeah, and like the Fielder contract's terrible, and the Chu contract looks like it's terrible, and Darvish had an elbow thing late last year where you don't know if that's going to come back. So I'm not really worried about the Rangers from the Mariners fans' perspective this coming year. But it's, as far as the expectations go, it's a little unfamiliar, of course, because the Mariners have been terrible for like a decade and a half. But I do remember distinctly being optimistic before 2008, after they got Eric Bedard, and before 2010, after they got Cliff Lee, and they traded Carlos Silva for Milton Bradley when he was still objectively promising. And they got Sean Figgins, and he was amazing in 2009, and everything was aligned, and then the Mariners lost like 101 games in both of those seasons. And so really, the optimism before the year is not unfamiliar, but the optimism in like May, well, let's deal with that in May.
Yeah.
If that comes to fruition.
Well, it's kind of funny because those other 2 years that you're talking about, there were kind of like big acquisitions that were kind of tied to it. And this year for the Mariners, it's really, I mean, there have been some moves. I mean, you mentioned Nelson Cruz. Austin Jackson is going to be playing his first full season there. You've got some other kind of bits and pieces coming in. But really, you're bringing back mostly the same team that was successful in fits and starts last year. So it's a little different in that it's not one guy coming in, riding in on a horse to save the day. It's kind of the same guys riding in on donkeys or whatever right. metaphor you want to use.
Just getting back on the horse they left in the ballpark.
Right, exactly. So that should feel a little bit different, I would think.
Yeah, and it's I feel like I say this every year because you end a season, and if you have a lot of like really bad black hole players on the team, then you think, well, at least next year we won't have those black holes. And I've said this every single season about the Mariners, but next year they shouldn't have James Jones being bad and Corey Hart being bad and Justin Smoke being bad and Stefan Romero being bad and Kendrys Morales being bad and Abe Almonte being bad, and I'm not done. Erasmo Ramirez was bad. Hector Nueva, he was bad for one inning, but I remember it vividly.
I'm holding out for my guy. You didn't mention Andy Chavez, who's my absolute favorite Mariner.
Well, you know what? As a matter of fact, as much as I didn't love having Andy Chavez around for the multiple years he's done that, he was a hell of a lot better than James Jones last year, so he wasn't the problem.
That's true.
So, yeah, that puts some of last year's offense in perspective, where Andy Chavez was a welcome sight, but he's still around this year. They got him on a minor league contract. They announced it the same day as Franklin Gutierrez, so those are two very different things that happened concurrently.
they don't necessarily probably have the defensive range that they once did. I was at Safeco for a Mariners game. I think it was back in 2009, and I think it was 2009. Was that the year that Chavez had that just destructive injury where he was out for most of the whole season? I was at the game where he wound up getting injured, I bought a random. They had a promotion where they were given random signed baseballs in white paper bags, and you got a random players, and I pulled Andy Chavez's ball and signature out of this bag, and then literally like 15 minutes later he blew out his leg and was done for the rest of his Mariner season. So that was I felt like I had some agency in that, and that was both thrilling and wholly depressing.
Of all of the things that Unieski Bedencourt did, or more appropriately didn't do as a Mariner, I have the most vivid recollection is there was this picture. It was Getty or AP or something. It was a picture right in the immediate aftermath of that play where Chavez is down. He looks like any player who's down. He's just like not moving, and he's down on the grass. He looks like he's dead. And then Unieski Bedencourt, who ran into Chavez's knee, is like hunched over, looking over. His body is positioned over Chavez's basically corpse. You don't know if it's a corpse or not on the ground. And Bedencourt has his head looking up, kind of like you would think maybe a player is like signaling for the trainer to come out, like, oh, he's hurt. But he has this expression like, I don't think anybody saw that, so I'm just going to leave. And it's, yeah. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and last year Bedencourt was the worst player in Japan, and he had gout. So, you know, he's not had the career that you would have expected of him, but he at least took Andy Chavez down with him, so.
Yeah, that's poetic justice in some ways, I guess, now that he's terrible overseas and after being terrible for so long for the Mariners. Yeah. So
if you can't be good, then just make sure other good players become bad. And one way you do that is destroy them.
Yeah, well, that's good on Uni for finally doing something of note during his career. That's at least now the outfield situation that you kind of alluded to and the DH situation. I mean, those were both pretty bad scenarios last year. I mean, Ackley was somewhat productive. Michael Saunders was somewhat productive, so naturally he's gone now. And Austin Jackson was not productive, but should have been productive. So that was kind of an interesting midseason move. But now the outfield looks a lot different, right? I mean, now you've got some substantial real baseball players, not named, you know, James Jones or Almonte or something like that. Do you feel a lot more comfortable with the outfield going into this season, or is this still one of those things where you're kind of like, well, where's the rest of the offense going to come from out there?
I mean, I guess if you look at it, you can see the objective projections, and they think Ackley's fine, nothing special. They think Jackson's fine, nothing special. And then there's like a decent platoon in right field. So it doesn't look like it's an emergency, but if you think about it, Dustin Ackley hasn't really blossomed at all. So he's currently the starter in left field, and he's below average as far as I'm concerned, unless he proves otherwise. Austin Jackson, you think he's fairly stable. He was good in Detroit, but then he came over and he had just a terrible second half with Seattle. Like, he was worse, or at least as bad as like James Jones and Abe Almonte in center field. And so I don't think you can take it for granted that he's going to be an average player again. And then in right field, I don't think there's anything bad you can say about Seth Smith. He's just like a reliable, boring white player. But then his platoon mate, Justin Ruggiano, who the Mariners just got from the Cubs, he has some distressing signals in his numbers last year. And I think it's worth noting that the Cubs got rid of Ruggiano and then almost immediately signed Chris DeNorfia, who the Mariners had as part of a right field platoon last year and didn't like. Right. And the Cubs are smart. You know, they're run by smart individuals. I'm going to go as far as to say that they're a little smarter analytically than the Mariners people, and the Cubs preferred DeNorfia over Ruggiano. So it's interesting. But there was a recent move, and you alluded to this in the intro, that other people were not privy to hearing, but the Mariners did just sign Ricky Weeks who last year was like, no, I'm not going to play the outfield. And then this year, well, it looks like he's in position to play some outfield.
Yeah, that's kind of really interesting. I thought that was a fascinating move that the Mariners made, and I really, really enjoy it. Now, I say that now. Unfortunately, I'm terrible at predicting future performance, so that's probably going to work out very poorly for you. But I love the idea of him being some sort of like multi-positional utility guy. I was kind of hoping that some other teams would do that sort of thing. The Rays with Asdrubal Cabrera, possibly. I think those kind of guys who are, you know, bad defense but okay hitting middle infielder types, you know, if they can build some flexibility and play in the outfield, I think that's a really kind of cool niche that they could fill, you know, kind of as if a poor man's Ben Zobrist or something like that, or really, really destitute person's Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, like Ben Zobrist fell in some really hard times.
Yeah. So you got Weeks maybe who could come in and play some outfield, maybe spell Ackley in left field. You've mm-hmm. got the Ruggiano and Smith platoon in right. The Mariners never really struck me as a huge platoon team. Do you think they would commit to going forward with maybe two outfield platoons? Because that seems, I mean, that's a lot for any non-Oakland Athletics team, it seems like.
Yeah, it's difficult, especially when you look at first base and you think, you know what, Logan Morrison could probably use a platoon. And so I don't know how many more platoons they have room for. There's a lot of versatility they could get, in theory, out of Willie Bloomquist. But if they brought up, like, Brad Miller, put him on the bench or something, then he could play almost anywhere. I think you're probably not going to see two dedicated platoons. I think Ackley will get some chances against lefties. And I think Weeks will spell multiple people. But there will clearly be a platoon in right field between Smith and Ruggiano, assuming that one works. And then I think Ackley will be sort of a pseudo-platoon, but Weeks will play in left field. He'll probably play at first base. Maybe he even gets a few chances at DH. I don't know. But he'll probably spell Morrison and Ackley. So it'll be one real platoon and then two sort of in-between platoons until, I don't know, somebody sucks and the situation changes.
Yeah, and the Mariners are probably in position where if something really terrible in terms of the position player crop goes bad, they could probably make a move. They've got, you know, some depth in the minors, their minor league system. They've got some really high-end prospects and guys like Alex Jackson and DJ Peterson. They've got some lower-end depth, and as has been well-documented, they've got a couple of guys who could play shortstop for a lot of major league teams in Taylor and Brad Miller. So gun to your head, there isn't actually a gun to your head, but if there were, which guy would you rather have manning shortstop for the Mariners this year? Would it be Taylor or would it be Miller?
Well, just to mimic the pressure of the decision, I actually did put a gun to my head for this, but I think that...
That's terrible.
Hold on. Was the question who would I prefer or who are they going to pick?
I don't care about what's actually going to happen. I care about what you would prefer between the two, because what's actually going to happen is probably going to be dependent on I would guess, factors that are wholly nonsensical. It's very possible that it could just be a spring training thing, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I want to know from your perspective who you'd rather see at that time in shortstop.
Thinking strictly in terms of 2015, my preference is Brad Miller. I just like him more as a player. I think he's also a better fit for the park. But one of the things that I have in my own head about Brad Miller is after this season, or you know, even maybe sometime during this season, if he and Chris Taylor look like they're pretty good, I think Miller has the athleticism to maybe be the Mariners' answer in center field after Austin Jackson's gone. And so I can see an argument where it's a close enough race at shortstop now between Taylor and Miller, they're both fine, that they could choose Taylor and then have Miller go down to Tacoma, play every day, and get some work at different positions so that then they can get an idea of his versatility, and then that can change the equation for 2016. So in that sense, if they choose Taylor, that's fine with me as long as they still do the right thing with Miller, and I think that his versatility should be tested because it seems like he should have a whole lot of range.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, theoretically, the Mariners are not going to be looking for somebody to spell Robinson Cano or Kyle Seager, hopefully ever. Hopefully those guys will play 162 games for the length of their contract, however long that may be. I believe it's something like 20 or 30 years at this point. But if either of those guys could play the outfield, we've alluded to, there's very few outfielders there. And you know, Logan Morrison may not be the long-term answer at first base for the Mariners. I think there's some possibility that they're going to require somebody else at some point there.
Yeah, I'm really not big on Logan Morrison, but it is what it is. There's no...
Logan Morrison is probably big enough on himself to cover for anybody else. All right, and then there's the pitching situation. You know, Felix is Felix and will be phenomenal until the end of time. But then beyond him, you've got a couple of question marks in the rotation. You got Iwakuma, who's probably one of, if not the most underrated starting pitchers in all of baseball. And then you've got some young guys. I mean, how excited are you about the rotation going forward? Is that something that you feel pretty confident in going into the season, or is it their pitchers, so you have no confidence in anybody other than perhaps maybe Felix, who's not of this earth?
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem, no issues with Felix. I assume Felix will either be Felix again, or something will go wrong, and then I'll kill myself, so I don't really have to worry about that. And then Iwakuma, I have every trust that if he's healthy, he'll be fine enough. And so after that, then you get into James Paxton, Jay Happ, and the competition for the fifth spot at present, which is Taiwan Walker, and Erasmo Ramirez is in there. He's at options. Rowenis Elias, and Danny Helton. Danny Helton is a guy who we all forgot about because he... Whatever. This isn't about Danny Helton. He'll earn his way into a podcast if he actually does anything. But as far as the rotation is concerned, Felix, fine. Iwakuma, worse, but still fine. And Jay Happ, I didn't love the trade that sent Happ to the Mariners for Michael Saunders. I prefer Saunders. I prefer the fact that he has twice as long club control. It costs less money, whatever. I found out after the fact that it seems like a lot of teams kind of see Happ as this sleeper. There have been a lot of calls that were going to the Blue Jays and also then to the Mariners after Happ got traded. A lot of teams are interested in getting him. His velocity has been on the rise, and he's just showing some interesting promise for a guy who's already in his 30s. So I think he's a pretty good fit for the ballpark. I think he'll be fine. They needed some rotation depth. James Paxton, I like him a lot more than I like Taiwan Walker. I think he still has some real command issues. He doesn't miss enough bats yet for my liking, but I like him just fine. Walker I don't love, but then there are options. Elias is fine. I think that there's not a weak spot, and while I'm not wild about the depth in the rotation, it helped a lot to get somebody like Happ. I mean, I guess Chris Young is still out there if they wanted to be bold, but I don't think they're going to do that.
That's terrifying.
Well, it is, because we did just see 29 starts of him, and he was fine for the most part, but on a minor league contract, preferable to a major league contract. Anyway, this isn't about Chris Young, but the Mariners have, it seems like, six good enough big league starters, and then you wonder, Erasmo Ramirez, he'll probably just get dropped in March or April, so he doesn't really count, but then you don't know what you're going to have in Danny Helton, and then it seems like you can see that there's maybe a weakness after the six, but there's only so much depth you can really accumulate from trades and on the waiver wire, because pitchers generally aren't going to agree to go to a team where they're not guaranteed a rotation spot. So I think they're doing fine there. They have one of the better rotations in the league, and though they don't match up with the Nationals or the Dodgers, thankfully they don't have to until the World Series.
Yeah, and if you're in the World Series against the Nationals or the Dodgers, then that means something has gone horribly, horribly right, and then it doesn't really matter. I mean, that if that's the case, probably Paxton's a five-win pitcher, and Walker has ascended to a higher plane of existence or something like that. Just go real quickly back to Chris Young. Chris Young is a freak, and he's phenomenally interesting. But one thing that I thought was really interesting is Stephen Loftus over at Beyond the Box Score. He did a whole big article about opponent-adjusted FIP and opponent-adjusted ERA, and he made Chris Young look so bad. Like, apparently, Chris Young had just the best luck in the world in terms of facing really, really terrible hitters last year. So that made me kind of chuckle a little bit to myself because, he had that great discrepancy between his ERA and his FIP, and if you take into account his opposition, it actually made him look even worse than it already did, which I thought was really interesting. So
that's
if
interesting.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I've been looking at some of these numbers recently because I'm interested in adjusting for opponents, and I hadn't come across Chris Young yet. So now I'm going to do a quick check just using what they have at Baseball Prospectus, and what I can find is Chris Young. Yeah, I don't know. I will have to read this article because according to Baseball Prospectus, he actually faced slightly harder opponents than average. But then that doesn't account for platoon concerns, etc. It's complicated. It's really complicated to try to adjust for quality of opponent because you don't know how much to look at or how little to look at. But in any case, I don't think there's really only one stat that makes an argument for Chris Young, and that's just ERA, because everything else points in the wrong direction. His health, his walks, his strikeouts, his ground balls, everything is bad except for the one thing that sometimes is okay.
Yeah.
And he has earned some of the benefit of the doubt just because he's built a whole career on this. It makes sense that he gets a ton of pop-ups, ton of pretty lazy fly balls. But I think Steamer has him projected for like -1 WAR next year. And while that's just based on FIP instead of ERA, you can sort of understand why he remains unemployed, because there's a lot of reasons to not believe in Chris Young.
Yeah, Chris Young's great at ERA, great at height, and that's like 75% of a major league career. So it really, if you can do those two things, it really doesn't matter what all our nerd stats say, I guess. So the rotation looks pretty good. We could talk about the bullpen, but bullpens are crapshoots, so yep. Why even waste our time with that? But the bullpen could be just fine. The infield looks good. The outfield looks good. It's either going to be a crushing disappointment, or the Mariners are going to break out and maybe have the season that we've kind of been hoping for ever since the hashtag #6org started coming through on Fangraphs. I think there's some cause for hope this year. I think that would be a nice thing for the franchise and its fans if they were able to do well this year.
Yeah, and it's, I guess you could say the timing is pretty good given what happened to the city's football team just a few weeks ago, that it's helpful to have something else they can look forward to that'll take up 6 or hopefully even 7 months of time until the football team comes back. But I think that it's objectively the most promising season the Mariners have been able to look forward to in quite some time. And I think every year, unless you're like this year's Phillies, you go into it and you think, well, I can see how this could work. And so you always sort of lie to yourself, twist things a little bit to drive up the optimism no matter what your situation is in February and March. But this year, there's a lot less twisting necessary. So it's a little confounding. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a little unfamiliar. But the hope is not unfamiliar, and thankfully we've been crushed enough that we're also kind of used to that. So really, numb, I guess.
That's what you look for every March when pitchers and catchers start to report this time in February. You always look for that numb feeling in the pit of your stomach when baseball season's coming up. I'm not unfamiliar with it, though, being a Mets fan in the Wilpon era. So I've been there. We have less hope than the Mariners, though, I think.
This team is going to do something, and we're going to see it do that.
At least 161 games worth of the Mariners doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. You just hope for that one rain out that doesn't get rescheduled because it turns out nobody cares. That's always a good feeling.
Right. So aside from the Mariners, I mean, you write about all baseball at Fangraphs. You do it very, very well. You're a favorite of pretty much everybody at the staff at Beyond the Box Score. So there, now that we've inflated your ego a little bit, I'll throw another question your way. Is there something non-Mariners related that you're most excited about seeing during the 2015 season? Something that particularly piques your interest, a player, a team, and if you give a boring answer like Mike Trout, we'll just end the podcast right there.
Oh, okay. Well, then Mike Trout. I got to go. I think it's hard because for what I do for work, I basically have to write two things a day each weekday. And so I'm covering a lot of different topics. My brain is constantly scattering around trying to find something to write about. And it's like a difficult thing twice a day unless something just comes to mind. But what is difficult about that is because I'm flitting between so many different topics, it's harder for me to retain the ones that I find genuinely interesting. So when someone asks me a question like that, then I have trouble recalling off the top of my head the things I actually do find the most interesting. But I know I am looking forward quite a bit to seeing how Jung Ho Kong does in Pittsburgh, because I find him to be absolutely fascinating as the first position player to come over from the KBO. Mm-hmm. I know Fangraphs writer Dan Farnsworth just had a very encouraging breakdown of his swing, I think, last week. So that's got some people excited. I'm excited just because, you never know if he's going to be sort of Korea's Ichiro. And then Ichiro had a ton of skeptics when he first came over. And then, he won the MVP as a rookie. So Kong, really interesting. I'm kind of interested to see how what happens with the pace of the game. Because as a baseball writer, I think I'm entitled to complain about the fact that baseball goes too slow. I know most people don't care, but, I want to do other things sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm looking forward to that. But really, I'm just looking forward to another season of things happening that are, even though it's kind of, every season has the same things happening on some level, I'm just interested to have different names and slightly different numbers so that I can just immerse myself in new numbers instead of looking at the same crap I've been looking at ever since October, when it's been like, this is all the same data set. I want new data sets just so I can, from a selfish perspective, I just want new writing material. That's what it is. Baseball will always entertain, and I just need some new numbers so I can stop writing things like 1,300 words on Chris Young, because you know who cares? Not even me.
Well, I don't think that's true. I love 1,300 words on Chris Young, especially if it's accompanied by a GIF or two. That would make me very happy. So don't give up entirely yet. I'm with you on just having, like, you know, the things that are unexpected are always really exciting. You know, like mm-hmm. when you have a Chris Davis style breakout, or you have something like that, or Kong in his case, it would be absolutely fascinating to see if he's able to be, you know, somewhat successful, have some of that power that translates over to the major league game. And then that way we can have the Dodgers go ahead and spend all the money on KBO free agents now instead of Cubans. And, you know, it'll be a completely different run on players, and we can have, you know, weird comparisons to that or to Ichiro. I will also be fascinated if the Pirates don't give him a shot and he winds up, you know, sitting on the bench, and, you know, they roll with Jody Mercer, because that's what the Pirates do sometimes. Although I can't mock the Pirates too much. A couple of our writers just got picked up by the Pirates, so I can't mock them. They'll probably make lots of great decisions, and please don't fire Stu or Steve Silverman.
It'll be funny when, like, the second Korean position player comes over, and then all the lazy analysts are like, I guess we can only compare him to Jung-ho Kong. Reminds me of Jung-ho Kong, and then it'll just be like that until we get a third.
Oh yeah, that'll be awful. Thanks for really bringing me down there. It's like, yeah, how you're not allowed to make cross race comparisons, like between prospects. It's just you can't compare anybody to anybody else. That would be that. Now I'm really sad.
I guess another thing I'm kind of looking forward to is I've written a few things about Marcus Stroman, and now the more I read and analyze Marcus Stroman, the more I think that he's got this, like, dark horse chance at the Cy Young, because he's got, like, everything working in his favor now. Almost literally everything, except he's in a hitter-friendly ballpark, but he's got so many pitches, he's got good command, he's thoughtful, and now he's going to have a really good defensive catcher in Russell Martin catching him, and he's already been a rookie, so he shouldn't have too much of an innings cap. I think Stroman is just going to be amazing this year. That's going out on something of a limb, I guess, but I'm very much excited to see what he does.
Yeah, the Cy Young comp is not something I've heard thrown around too much. I mean, it does sound like there's a lot of positive talk about Stroman, because he's awesome, and so that's a good reason to kind of be touting him going into the season. But a Cy Young comp, that's I'm gonna write that one down, and then we will set it on fire later on if something else happens. But it'd be really crazy to see the Blue Jays have a pitcher, especially a young pitcher, who does well instead of turns into a fireball.
Yeah,
that would be really, really fun for them, and I would really be excited to see the Blue Jays do well in the AL East, because I guess it's their turn. I don't think anybody else, you know, they're the one team that hasn't done real well in that division over the last 5 years, so it'd be fun to see them kind of take a turn at doing well, especially with all the moves they've made in the offseason.
I think that's the idea. That explains why they did what they did. They're tired of being the Blue Jays. They want to be, I don't know, I don't have a joke. They want to be something better than what they've been.
Well, that's I think that that's a lesson we all can apply to our lives. Don't be the Blue Jays. Be something better than the Blue Jays. Jeff, I really appreciate you coming on and talking to me about baseball and putting up with some lame jokes. You can find Jeff at FanGraphs. You can find Jeff occasionally at USS Mariner. Anything else you wanna plug before I let you go and give you some of your time back?
Well, I don't really like to plug things, so I guess I'll plug this podcast. If you've been listening to this podcast, then thank you for listening to this podcast, and you might want to consider listening to it again, just in case you missed anything the first time.
That's the nicest thing anybody has ever said about my podcast. I really appreciate that, Jeff. If you want to know more about the Shift Podcast, you can follow us on Twitter at Shift Podcast. You can send us emails at shiftpodcast@gmail.com. You can rate and review us on iTunes. I will remind you again, please rate and review us on iTunes. For some reason, we are still located under the auspices of high school and college baseball on iTunes. So nobody can find our podcast unless you rate and review us. I am a helpless little baby that is unable to change any of this. So help us out, you know, throw us a bone here if you like the show and you like us having great guests like Jeff and I don't know, some of the other hacks that we've had on the show, like Grant Brisby and and those other folks. But
let me tell you about that son of a bitch.
Yeah, right. He's just a jerk. but thank you very much for listening. Apologies to Grant, and we'll catch you guys next time.